I don't know why I'm telling this story on a video game podcast. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 411, recorded on January 25th, 2016. Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 244th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Spectre.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. Paul's gone again. Although I should have asked him if he wanted to do this episode. Because there's some Nintendo news, which is really interesting.
Oh yeah, the next phase, it's going to be not... they said they're not going to build on old stuff. They're going to do something new.
Well, it's not only that, but we're jumping the gun here. What have you been playing? What have you been playing today? Lately,
I've kind of taken a break from Fallout because all I have left now is just to fiddle with settlements until the expansions come out. And I played a little bit of Minecraft, and I've been trying to do the King's Quest Chapter 2, so I'm trying to play that. Yeah. And I'm enjoying the King's Quest thing, and they're once again asking you to choose between compassion, strength, and wisdom.
Yeah, the second episode has been getting a lot of low reviews.
It's okay. I like King's Quest, so
okay. Well,
I'm enjoying this.
You don't have to match everybody else's opinion. I mean,
that's true. I'm enjoying it because I like seeing the next generation. I like seeing the kids of Alexander and Rosella, and I like seeing their interaction, how they interact with each other, and how the grandfather is teaching them lessons through his stories, whether it's completely factual that it happened this way, or it's just he's just trying to teach them, you know, lessons and stuff. So I'm really enjoying that, and I feel like this is Graham, and these are Alex and Rosella's kids, and I feel like they've done a good job to recapture this family, you know, and I really love them, and I'm happy with it. So,
on conversely, episode 4 of the Minecraft Story Mode has been getting not awesome reviews, but good reviews.
I thought it was a good ending. I mean, even though there's one more chapter, I like that. In fact, I like that they've done this ending where you get a conclusion. And you do get different results, because I was looking at some people's other results, what they got, and I have no idea how they got it, but it's like they really did some different things.
Hold on. So, spoilers. Okay, so tell us how your ending was different from other people's endings.
Well, for starters, I got to be friends with the Ocelot leader. I forgot what his name is now. And
don't ask me, I don't know.
Yeah, anyways, he was there with his friends, and then that's a video I watched. His friends weren't there, and he just like walks away from the main character. He's like, "Screw you," and walks away. For me, he was like, he nodded. He's like, "Yeah, we defeated the Ender, you know, monster," and he was all like happy because we just built this rapport, and you know, we helped each other out, and we just, you know, we became leaders in our own rights, both of us.
So. It sounds a lot like Blade Runner, the game that came out in like 1997.
Mm-hmm.
There were a bunch of different endings, and that game had infinite replays because it randomized who was a replicant and who wasn't.
Right.
But it had a ton of different endings.
That's cool. There was a character that gets wither sickness, and she survived for me, but
she dies for other people.
She probably does die for other people, but more than that, she was wearing crazy armor in this other person's game, and she was just her regular self in mine. So I don't know what I did that got it that way. That was just such a... So there's multiple variants, not just like she's dead or alive, but she'd be wearing this armor for whatever reason.
Maybe she had her do some fighting or told her to do something.
I don't know, but it
see,
just
now,
like...
now I'm gonna have to wait until all the episodes are out to try it myself, you know, so I could get the entire season.
So there'll probably be even more things in the next one, because I remember again, there were characters I like, oh, I remember this, and then I never see them again. So hopefully that'll come to fruition in the last chapter of the Minecraft story.
You see, the thing I have a problem with The Walking Dead, or at least The Walking Dead Season 2, was that no matter what you did, no matter what choices you made, really, they didn't make a different choice. I mean, in Season 2, so you choose one of the guys to die, that's fine, but it has no effect on the story, you know? The only thing is the very, very end, when you make a binary choice, or actually a tertiary choice, there are three choices, in which you let... I forgot his name. You let him kill her, or she kills him, or Clem allows them both to die.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, and then they have a choice of either to stay or go. That's six endings. But before all that, nothing really matters. That's why I haven't played Walking Dead again, because I'm thinking, why would I want to put myself through that again?
I don't blame you.
Just a depressing story.
I find zombie stories and...
It isn't the zombie. It isn't the fact that it's zombies. I mean, let me put it this way. In Dragon Age, I chose to try to be a shining light in a world of shit.
Right.
You can play as a complete asshole. You can play any way you like, but at least that the way you play is yours and it has an effect on everybody who does it. In Walking Dead Season 2, it's just... You don't care about anybody, not even Clem, because they're all assholes.
Oh, I hate that.
And anybody who has a slight amount of good, that person is too nice. Bye, you're gonna die.
That sounds like Game of Thrones almost. Oh, this person's a nice person. Well, they're dead.
I have the first edition book of Game of Thrones from 1995. I haven't read it.
Well, why won't you read it?
I don't know, because it's a big, thick book, and I never really got around to reading it. I didn't even know how I got it.
I like big books, and I cannot lie.
You know, the thing is that, in 1995, I was living at home, and people, you know, I had books, and a lot of them, I don't know how I got, I think maybe my mother got them for me, or somehow I got them, but I never read them. I mean, when I was in high school, my cousin gave me the Thomas Covenant trilogies, the two of them all in one bundle.
And you did?
At least
read
I read
them?
That. No, I read that.
Oh, okay, good. That's good.
I read all of them. I haven't read the third trilogy, though. I have the two first book, and I just never bought the rest of it in the trilogy.
Oh, that's a shame. But I mean, there's a lot of good books out there, so, you know.
I've been reading Stephen R. Donaldson's other stuff. I intend to read Morden Sneed again.
It seems like. He has new books out now.
Okay. Morden Sneed is a series I really like. I also really enjoy The Gap Cycle, even though it's frickin' depressing. It's really dark and depressing if you've ever read it. I mean, here's an idea of how bad it is. In one scene, and oh, by the way, not safe for work, in many ways, we're talking sex and violence here. Okay, so be prepared to have a generous amount of brain bleach ready. So Angus Thermopylae and Nick Sicurso are in this bar in this place called The Bill, which is basically a hive of scum and villainy. So,
Mos Eisley?
Yeah, well, it's worse than Mos Eisley, because they don't have acts like this. So what happens is, in this world, you have people who are called BR, which means bioretributive, which means they have cybernetics forced on them, so they don't have any control over themselves, right? So there's this nightly or maybe weekly, maybe nightly or weekly act in which this woman comes out and she can't stop it from happening. She comes out, she has extraordinarily large breasts. Maybe they've been, you know, they're implants, you know, like silicone, but I don't think so. Because her entire act is showing a knife and cutting through things to make it duller. And she cuts off each breast, and they flop to the floor. But she doesn't die because there's mechanics in here that shut off her blood supply, so it doesn't go on. I don't know why I'm telling this story on a video game podcast, but anyways.
Yeah, I don't know either. This is,
anyways, but the implication is that she's forced to do this on a nightly basis. Because they reattach her all together again, and she has to do this over and over and over again, and they don't block the pain, apparently.
That sounds like the Institute and Vault-Tec got together and did this. Wow.
I don't think the Institute is that bad.
I think the Institute is pretty bad. But
I don't think they would have that kind of act. I mean, it's a really, really perverse art piece when you really want to think about it.
Yeah.
But anyways, but I'm just saying, it's just, you know, that series has those kind of scenes in it. But the really terrible character, Angus Thermopylae, who was... See, I think Stephen R. Donaldson wanted to see how miserable and disgusting and remorseless a-hole you can make a protagonist that you'll actually care about at the end of the series. You know? Wow. And he succeeds, by the way. He succeeds. Because he does have a backstory, and there's a way, there's a reason why he's the way he is, you know?
Right.
But the thing is that, you know, it's the same thing with Thomas Covenant, by the way. Thomas Covenant is a leper who,
right,
in his first minutes of being in this magical land, rapes a woman.
Oh, wow, that's not nice.
Because he doesn't believe she's real. I mean, it's not because he's a rapist, but he doesn't think she's real, anyway.
So it would be like he was playing a video game where you rape somebody and he would probably just...
I don't know many video games in which people are getting raped.
There's a, I'm not sure, it's Custard Stand or Custard's...
Oh, no, no, you see, that, I don't think he's actually raping her. I mean, she's tied to the pole, yeah, but the way it acts...
Looks like it,
Yeah, I think, what's it called? I mean, I'm not going to generate on whether a woman wants it or not in a video game.
In which the woman is
a bunch of pixels.
The pixels are made to look like what he's doing, and that's what it looks like he's doing.
I know what he has. I know. I've seen the game. I never owned it, by the way, but I've seen it.
I've never owned it either. I never knew it existed until freaking Adam Sessler on G4 kept showing it.
Really? Because I've known it since the 80s. I mean, this is an urban legend, by the way. It was real, but for a lot of kids, it was an urban legend. Until I actually saw the game in the storefront.
I never heard of it until I saw it on G4, on X.
Yeah, it's a cheap game. You're dodging arrows to, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some better porno 2600 titles. I mean, we could do an entire podcast on porno 2600 titles. All of them really bad. But, you know, I mean, they're about the same quality as the Bible games. So think of that of what you will. I reviewed Catechumen for, I think it was PC. And it was, Catechumen is a legendary. And the way I described it was Doom for Rod and Todd Flanders. In which you have this sword that shoots out these holy bolts to exorcise people. You don't kill anybody, you just exercise them.
Wow.
And it was a really bad 3D first-person shooter. I mean, it was tough to play, not because it was difficult, but because the programming was so bad. And then we could talk about the Left Behind real-time strategy game from 2000. That was the absolute worst. See, here's the thing, you know, people can watch bad movies, right? And enjoy them. But it's harder to enjoy a bad video game. Because you're...
Yeah.
Because you have to actually have good controls and all that stuff. I mean... the problem with Daikatana... was simply that your squad mates were so stupid. And if they died, that was it. Game over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they would just keep on getting themselves killed. So you had to contrive ways of keeping them back. But, you know, I don't care about games if they have killer robotic frogs. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about that. I think everybody just hated John Romero for saying, you know, he's going to make you his bitch and suck it down. Oh, by the way, John Romero, this is not a news item we have, but it is news. He released the first original Doom level in 21 years. The first official Doom level in 21 years, he created a level.
Yeah, I remember seeing that news. I thought I linked you to that, but that is very cool that they were able to... keep a game, or, you know, add to an old game and make new levels. But yeah, he had made a new level and you can play it, and it's really cool that you could keep doing that even on our.
I never bought the entire Doom. Everybody only had the demo.
Hmm.
Everybody had the demo for that and for Castle Wolfenstein, and also
Doom 2.
Yeah, and
I did have Doom 2.
And also for the I forgot his name. The Commander. Commander Keen games.
Mm-hmm.
Those were fun. and I rocketed them. And the thing is, that little did I know that there were actually Super Mario Brother games that were reskinned. Well, not really. No, actually, they weren't reskinned. One of them was. But basically what happened was that they did this, was it id or was it 3D Realms? I think it was id. Id was gonna make a PC version of Super Mario World, or Super Mario Brothers, for PC, an adaptation. And Nintendo decided, no, we're not gonna do it. So, they had all these, and they decided, fuck it, we're gonna make our own game that's basically a platformer like Super Mario Brothers, and that's how Commander Keen was born. And my favorite was Goodbye Galaxy, and I played the demo of that endlessly.
That sounds cool. I didn't play those games, but I played...
You gotta play. Even now, 20 years later, they still hold up really well. Because, man, you know, Super Mario Brothers holds up. This holds up.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you gotta play Commander Keen and Goodbye Galaxy. Actually, you know, the funny thing is that if you ever read Calvin and Hobbes, the plot sort of reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes, in which you're playing Spaceman Spiff. But you're not actually playing Spiff, of course, you're not playing because you get sued, but still, you know, and also everything is real, it's not in his imagination. So all these killer vegetables, because kids hate vegetables, are attacking you.
That's the, like,
so,
yeah,
so
the
look up Commander
or...
Keen, K-E-E-N, and, you know, it's really worth the worth. There's also a Sonic ripoff, too, Jazz Jackrabbit, which is out, and that also sort of holds up, you know, if you want to try a PC version of that, that's good, Jazz Jackrabbit. Anyways, what I have been playing is I finished Broken Age, and I sort of like the ending, and one thing about Paul Schaefer is from the world's most dangerous band with David Letterman. No, Tim Schaefer, every single one of his games that I've played, every single one of them, the ending is pitch perfect. No matter how meh the gameplay is in between, and there's been very little of that, all the endings that I've seen of his have all been perfect. The one game of his that I did not complete was Brutal Legend, because it sucked. You know, if I wanted to play a real-time strategy game, I'd play a real-time strategy game. I wouldn't play a third-person action game pretending to be a real-time strategy game. That just burned the... Maybe I should play it again with that in mind, knowing that I'm playing a third-person a real-time strategy game, and see if I enjoy it, knowing that, you know, because maybe it was the shock of having to play that. Anyways, the ending of Broken Age was perfect. Although... I'm not going to spoil the plot twist, but I'm trying to figure out how screwed up Shay must be after living his entire life like that, and finding out that they, you know, I have to wonder, because they sort of gloss over it, you know, and the plot twist say, oh wait, you mean that's been actually happening? That sucks for Shay. It's really strange, and why would they do that? So that's all I'm going to say about it. You'd have to play Broken Age to understand what I'm saying. And
it's just
friggin' bizarre. But once I get past that, not think about what the implications are, then I had a good time. It also has it's notorious for extremely difficult puzzles in the second half. And I admit I did have to go to the guide because the thing is that the thing that people have the most thing is, you know what? Write it down. That's pen and paper, you know? You don't have to try and memorize everything. Just write it down. That's what we used to do in adventure games.
Yeah, I didn't
we had
mind.
Clues, we write it down.
I enjoyed making maps and notes.
Well, it isn't maps. It's sort of like you have to write down... Because here's the thing, is that you cannot... guides cannot help you with it as much as they could, because it randomizes the codes. For every time you play the game, it randomizes the codes. So every time you have to do something different.
I just... like the old style of some of these games where you would have, like I said, write stuff down. Not just, I mean, I mentioned maps, like, for older adventure games.
You mean like Bard's Tale and...
Yeah, and was it Kyrandia? Yeah, I think it was Kyrandia. There was, like, this little dungeon where you had to walk around with these little...
How about the first Might and Magic? That was from 87.
Mm-hmm.
And people forget that Might and Magic used to be a Dungeon Master style, tile-based...
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Might and Magic was actually an open-world game. And we didn't know what an open world game was at the time, but it was an open world game. If you play it now, you say, oh shit, this is an open world game. Because you're going all over this world, and you're tromping around this entire world with a, you know, even though it's a square-based map, it's still an open world game.
Yeah, you're not railed to go here. You can go anywhere you want.
You can go anywhere you want. Even though it's a turn-based, grid-based game.
I remember playing it and getting myself killed because I didn't know where I was going and just,
yeah, you had to understand. You had to see the clues and say go this way because it'll be easier for you.
Yeah, because otherwise you're just walking into something that just totally kills you in like one hit. You're like, ooh, that's bad.
I didn't play it much. My cousin played the living hell out of it. I was more into Bard's Tale at the time. And also, well, any of the album cover EA games. So, yeah, right. I played a lot of Wasteland. And I never really got more than, like, an eighth through Wasteland, even though I loved it. I kept on dying in the same places. But I was playing a lot of other games, so, you know. Right. Oh, speaking of old-time EA cover album games, again, we haven't even gotten back to game news here. We haven't even started it. But I bought Mule the Board Game, which is based on the 1983 game, which I played the living heck out of as well. And for those of you who don't know what Mule is, I will play the theme right here. And that is, you know, if you don't know that theme, then you have to start learning your video game history. I mean, it was done by Dan Button, a.k.a. Danny Barry Button. Or is it Danny Benton Barry? I forget. Anyways, thing is that Dan Button transitioned. From male to female. And the funny thing is that he regrets doing it. He said it wasn't the turn-on he thought it would be. Well, Dan, it's kind of a one-way ticket there. We're not quite that medically advanced that you can go between, you know, oh, I'm going to try this. It's not working out. Let me change back. So, you know, anyways. Yeah, he was a genius, and he also did the first online game called Modem Wars. Anyway, so that was a game which was best played same computer. Because there are things that you did in it that would make the people you're playing against want to hit you. You know?
Right.
Oh, guess what? Oh, you know, guess how much you're going to make you pay for food? No, keep going. I have a monopoly on all the food you have to buy from me, and guess how much it's going to cost you? You know? Or when auctioning, oh, we're going to go up, up, up. Oh, by the way, at the very last thing, you step back, and they're forced to pay this insane amount. And it's like, I never really intended to pay that much for it, so enjoy buying it for that price. So, yeah. Anyways, the game is $80, the board game, Mule the Board Game. I got it on Amazon for $56, and since I had a $50 Amazon card, I bought it for $6, so that was quite the steal. Although, I'm thinking maybe I should have bought Red Dragon in instead. We'll see. Red Dragon game is a game that everybody can play, and it's really fun. Just look it up. Ooh. I'm not going to bother describing it right now. Basically, you play an adventurer. Okay, I'll describe it. You know when you're playing a role-playing game, after the game takes place after everybody's gone and did a big adventure, and everybody is flush with money? So they go to the tavern, and they drink, and they gamble. And the first person who isn't either A, knocked out, or B, stone drunk, is the winner. It gets all the money.
That's a nice challenge.
Yep. I always like playing Gog, the half troll. The half ogre, actually. Because he's a big, friendly guy who scares everybody. You know, like, Gog wants to give you a big hug! And, you know, and Gog wants to impress everybody, so he crushes a mug against his head. Not a can. And everybody gives him $1 because they're scared. But he's a big, friendly guy. You know, so but he's just very—he doesn't know his own strength. Anyways, so Broken Age, I was playing that. I also bought Rugu. Now, Rugu is a game from Xbox Live Arcade back in 2008, and I had a hankering for it, so I looked it up and it was on Steam, and I got it, and it's still very addictive. And basically, the game is you're trying to fit shapes through holes, and that's the entire game. Now, it's a lot more complicated than that. And I will give you a little story. I first played it at PAX East back in 2007 or 2008. And I was there with a media pass. And every day I came back to that one booth and played it. Because it was that addictive. So, yeah. Like, the first levels are really, really easy. And then the difficulty ramps up as it starts, you know. Because here's the thing, you know, it's easy to fit through things through holes, but then you have to do them going backwards. You have to do them with these things, and you have to make them speed up so they knock them out, or else they'll... just a lot of things that you have to keep track of, you know. It's
better than Flappy Bird.
It's... No, God, it's much better. You have to pay attention. Reflex game that is, you know, doesn't pretend to be a reflex game, but it is a reflex game. But mm-hmm. even when you lose, it's not frustrating. It's more like, oh, okay, I got to try that again because I know what I did wrong. See, right. I mean, the game is difficult, but you know what you did wrong, and it isn't the game's fault; it's your fault. Then it's fun. It's when the game starts cheating that you get annoyed. So, yeah, I've never gotten past World 214, and I plan to do so at some point in my life. The only unfortunate thing is there's no Steam achievements for this game.
Aw, that's a bummer. But I am thinking about...
It's not backwards compatible for the Xbox One either, so I can't get achievements that way either. Oh, yeah. You know, actually, I could boot up my Xbox 360 and play it on there.
I remember how we were talking about some of the backwards compatibility for some games on PlayStation 4, and they're going to be putting the remastered Dark Cloud 2 on the PlayStation 4, and that's actually tempting me to get it. Because
they actually are doing, from what I understand, Valkyria Chronicles as well.
Yeah, and I'm enjoying a lot of the level 5 games, and I like Dark Cloud 1.
You see, you're into JRPGs, I'm not so much. I mean, the last JRPG game that I really enjoyed was Blue Dragon.
There's good ones and bad ones.
I mean, I tried to get into Tales of... didn't work. I tried to get into Lost Odyssey, couldn't, you know.
Yeah, I didn't like Lost Odyssey. That I didn't like. It just didn't get into the character. It just showed you this big battle, so I just felt like that was the wrong...
I mean, I loved the story, by the way. I the story was really... Oh, I did enjoy Eternal Sonata, speaking of story.
I like that, too. I like
only because I knew everything about Chopin, and I liked... I knew everything about Chopin.
That was fun.
I knew everything about Chopin, and I wanted to see how they told the story.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the interludes. I mean, I still love watching on YouTube the interlude that has the Raindrop Prologue, and they talk about his relationship with George Sand, a woman who these days would be a female-to-male transsexual because she wanted to be a man so bad,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think maybe Chopin wanted to be was also transgender too, but in the 1800s that wasn't a possibility. So yeah. He was the girl, she was the guy. You know? Poor guy. I mean, imagine if they actually knew that you shouldn't take someone dying of tuberculosis to a tropical island.
Yeah.
where it rains a lot.
I really enjoyed how the battle mechanics were in that game. So I remember you had a certain amount of like ability points and you could walk around or run around and attack or throw a spell, and it was like, you know, part turn based, part action. It was like, you know, a hybrid, and I really wish there were more games like that, because it seems like either or. You don't get many of those hybrid battle mechanics. They're usually either action or they're turn based, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe that's what the Final Fantasy VII is going to be, some sort of hybrid turn based action. Because they had the menu there, and I don't know why you would need the menu if you're doing all action. So it might be a hybrid, maybe.
You know, they do have Final Fantasy XV. There is also some Final Fantasy XV news coming out, and I really didn't care.
Yeah, I don't care about Final Fantasy XV.
Anyways, we've spent over half an hour talking about other stuff.
Yay!
So, the first thing in game news. Starbreeze announces it'll build a VR arcade venue in Los Angeles. And this comes to us from Game Watcher. The virtual reality race continues to escalate as Starbreeze, best known for introducing Payday and Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, has announced that it'll be opening a virtual reality arcade in Los Angeles. The venue has been dubbed Project Starcade, aimed at making quote-unquote premium VR experiences accessible to the masses. Project Starcade, that is so 80s. That is so... That's
cool.
It sounds like where you'd be playing Space Paranoids and Tron. You know,
Starcade.
Project Starcade. Awesome. The Starcade Project, either way. It'll be featuring Starbreeze's own Star VR headset. Quote, "We've managed to secure a prime location where people are welcome to step into our Starcade and enjoy our Overkill's Walking Dead VR experience," stated CTO Emmanuel Marquez. When they say a secure prime location, I know they're talking about Hollywood Boulevard, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be near the Pantages Theater or Grumman's Chinese Theater or near the place where they had the Cheers set. I think they moved the Cheers set to the Smithsonian. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. Skybound Entertainment, which publishes Robert Kirkman's The Walking Dead graphic novels, reacted enthusiastically to the news, according to the publisher's president, Daniel Murray. "When we heard about Starcade Initiative, we were immediately excited. It allowed us to further explore The Walking Dead universe in a completely new way." Oddly, the press release did not mention Starbreeze's VR-specific game coming from being developed for Lionsgate, John Wick, The Impossible Task, which would seem to be a natural fit for the studio's arcade plans. I know nothing about John Wick, and I keep on hearing that name over and over and over lately. Do you know anything about John Wick?
John Wick. I'm not sure if that's the guy.
Oh, it's a movie. That's right.
The movie with Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, okay. They're making John Wick 2 in Rome.
I enjoyed it. It was fun to watch, you know?
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Did Keanu Reeves say, "Whoa"?
No, he did not.
No. Then it's not worth watching.
Oh, God.
The Star VR VOSA 210-degree field of view with dual 5.5 quad HD panel and position tracking. The VR headset also includes Fresnel lenses, which use ring-shaped segments to allow for short focal length while remaining lightweight. So my thing is that there's too many VR sets out there.
That's probably true.
There's Star, there's Oculus, there's the HTC one.
It's better than just one and nobody else even bothers. This will, I think, help refine the VR industry and get better and better goggles or better systems. And also, by the way, I want to say that I really love the Brothers A Tale of Two Sons game. That was a really good game, and I don't know if they could, I don't know what you could if you could use that with VR or not. I mean, because that was all about the controller and changing dynamic of that as your
the issue here progress. Is that you're getting into platforms again, because for example Elite Dangerous has announced the people who are doing Elite Dangerous, you know,
yeah,
even though it's been shown on Oculus Rift, they have announced that they're not going to be supporting Oculus Rift, they're going to be supporting Steam VR. So here you have, okay, now we're getting into platforms, like you're going to buy a PS4 or an Xbox One or a Wii U, and it's worse because these things are $600. It's you're paying a lot more than just $300 for a console. You know, you can buy two consoles for the price of one pair of goggles. And you also have the PlayStation VR as well, but at least that's attached to a single platform.
See, I'd rather just buy two consoles then and not worry about the VR crap. That just feels not worth it.
Yeah, and at least, you know, with the PlayStation VR and the Microsoft HoloLens, PlayStation VR is going to be for one platform. Microsoft HoloLens is going to be for PC and for Xbox One. Done! You don't have to worry about having to choose, oh, there's two types of PlayStation VRs. You can do this, or you can do that. Although, I wonder, I just find it amusing, the PlayStation dropped the PlayStation Eye pretty darn quick. And they were kept on going on and on and on about, what's the alternative to virtual reality again? Augmented reality.
Yeah.
You know, and Microsoft is going all in on augmented reality. Although I will say, you know, I was at the Microsoft press conference at E3 when they debuted the HoloLens with people playing Minecraft with it.
Yeah.
And the Minecraft thing just popped up there. It's like, I think you sold the HoloLens to a lot of Minecraft players who want to be able to see their land in 3D in front of them, you know?
That is tempting, you know, to see that. I just don't know if...
We don't know how much the HoloLens is going to cost, you know. I don't think it'll cost as much, because augmented reality is a lot different than virtual reality. Because virtual reality, you actually have to do a lot of tracking. Right, and you also have to have, you know, with HoloLens, you're fixed spot. You know, I mean, look at the PlayStation Eye. It didn't require much. The 3DS does augmented reality. You know, the only difference with the HoloLens is that you're actually wearing the lenses instead of, you know, having them aiming your tablet or your 3DS at something and seeing the object on the. So, at least there's that.
Yeah, I think people just don't really want to wear a headset for prolonged amounts of time. How long people might play a game, and they don't want to have a headset that's on their head. I mean, like, just wearing these earphones that I have, it gets a little much on my ears, so imagine having
at least
some sort of...
It is interesting, though, because I saw Eve Valkyrie, and I said, yeah, that would probably be really, really cool in virtual reality. The problem is, I'm not going to spend $600 friggin' dollars for it. Sorry,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, that doesn't... that's just too much. Like, first you're buying a $300 console, then it's like, oh, no, buy this...
Well, in this case, you're buying a $1,200 PC or even
and,
more.
And not all the games are going to use that thing either. Just like with the Kinect and the Eye and all that stuff, it'll be for some games. It'll be like a handful. So, really, you're not getting...
Yeah, but the Kinect is only $100, you know? So, at least there's that. At least it's, like, yeah, it's a little expensive, and probably you have sales that makes it $60, so you're basically buying another game, you know? And I actually have a use for my Kinect because I always use the voice commands when commanding my Xbox.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I do it use it for. It's worth the admission for that, even though I spent $500 for the Xbox One for a launch title. And that's the price of having a launch title for being an early adopter. But at least right. I'm getting a lot of use out of it. You know, I don't know how much use I'm going to get out of a VR headset. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item.
Mighty Number 9 unexpectedly delayed by Comcept. This is from Game Watcher.
Just to interrupt you for a minute, who names their company Comcept?
Yeah, that's weird. That
I mean, maybe it's communications
word.
Concept, but still Comcept. Every time I write it down, I think, oh, I spelled it wrong. Oh, no, wait, that's
they
the name of the company.
They could have come up with something better. I don't know if that's a pun or not, but they could have. Mighty Number 9 was expected to meet a 9th February release date, but Comcept boss Keiji Inafune...
We should all know his name.
Inafune.
He's the guy responsible for Mega Man. Come on.
Well, you know, I'm not really into Mega Man.
Neither
I'm
am
sorry,
I, but at least
after
I...
Mega Man,
he's still...
After Mega Man 2, I was done.
Wait a minute. Well, he's not only Mega Man...
Oh, I'd have to look it up, and I'm reading a story now, so I can't really do that. Anyways, announced in a Kickstarter update that the game would be delayed to sometime this spring. The reason for the delay are miscalculations on the part of Inafune and his dev team on a network coding. The reason for the delay is rooted in bugs inside the network modes and specifically problems with matchmaking. Inafune explained, there are two large reasons for this problem. One, for them being the large number of platforms supported, the solution for each platform is slightly different. And the other stems from the fact that the engine we are using is no longer being updated, which means adjustments for the matchmaking and online code are being made manually, actually programming parts of the engine by the dev team themselves. Inafune went on to promise, because we are constantly working on it in cooperation with all our partners, we want to wait and make sure that everything is confirmed to be ready before giving a new specific release date. But we expect it to be released realistically be in spring 2016, so soon. Mighty Number 9 was delayed twice before pushing the release date from April 2015 to February 2016, back in October. Inafune swore the game would not be delayed again.
So basically, Inafune is Mega Man, Onimusha, Resident Evil, and Dead Rising.
Oh, okay.
He also worked on graphic designer for Street Fighter and all those games that Capcom did for the Disney titles, like Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers and DuckTales.
Okay.
And Bionic Commando.
Oh, yeah, I played some of that. I don't know what it is with me with Bionic Commando.
Really?
But it's like the ability not to jump, but you have to use your arm, just really jump.
Yeah,
like
it was a big thing.
Guy to jump. It's like, I don't care if he has his arm. Jump, damn it.
It was a big thing that in in Bionic Commando Rearm 2, they actually gave him the ability to jump.
Yeah, finally. I was like, oh, thank God.
Matter of fact, oh, you know what? It was actually in the third or fourth episode of Video Game Roundtable that we actually announced that, and there was a really funny part, a bit between me and I forgot his name. He was a British dude, and I'll have to play that clip as well because it's so hilarious. Because I started up with the porn music, and I said, you know, it's not only his arm that extends.
Oh god. Oh, man.
And I had the porn music playing as well. Anyways, you know, this is the same thing as your other that other Kickstarter game that I think you actually invested in Phoenix. What was the name?
No, Phoenix? I did not invest in Phoenix.
What's the name of it, though? I know it's not Phoenix. It's Phoenix
Project,
something.
Project Phoenix.
Project Phoenix. So this is just another... People are really annoyed because this game keeps on getting delayed. Yeah. And the timing is really interesting that people are noting that he announced it now, 2 weeks before release, right after his other Kickstarter closed.
Oh,
but he announced the delay after his other Kickstarter was finished. Because, yeah, you don't want to let people know that you're having problems on the game you're working on when you're doing a Kickstarter funding.
It sounds like he suffers what many Kickstarters did and did poor planning in their programming and what they were going to promise, because I guess he's doing all these platforms, but he doesn't have the manpower to program for all these platforms.
No, the thing is he overpromised everything.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to give you cartoons and DLC and all this stuff. I mean, whole crap load of Kickstarter backer rewards for Mighty No. 9.
I think I remember hearing about this coming out, and this was like years ago. I mean, before
it was 2013. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was supposed to come out, like the item says, in 2014, and we've seen things delayed a lot longer than that.
I just remember this before Pillars for some reason. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was before Pillars at least.
Here's the thing: is that you knew it's BS, because why in the world will a game that most people are going to play single player? Who plays Mega Man in multiplayer? Seriously. Who plays multiplayer? No, no one does. No one does. As a matter of fact, it's never been a feature. People only care about the single player. You can patch in the multiplayer later.
True.
You know?
Do I don't know, yeah.
Hey, look. It's like Street Fighter V is adding their story DLC as free DLC. The story campaign, because no one cares about the story campaign of Street Fighter, you know, but they're still going to include it, but they're saying, you know what, it's going to be free downloadable DLC at some point, so if you want it, you can take it.
I kind of like the idea of story mode. I mean, I remember, I think the first Street Fighter actually had a story mode, and then the rest were just, you know, fighting games. I'd actually like to have it almost sounds like it would be Double Dragon, like where you're fighting the bad guys.
I think it's more like the Dead Rising thing, in which you have a single character, you go through all these other characters, and then you get a cutscene at the end. But the thing is that, you know, they're saying, okay, we want to release this on time. We know you don't care, most of you don't care about the story mode. But those of you who do, it'll be free DLC later on.
That's nice. I like that. I mean, free stuff is always good.
Yeah, that reminds me of the other, I don't know if we have it as a news item here, but yeah, there's... So, but yeah, I don't know what it is. It just smells. There's something that smells bad about this. And they said it was going to come out sometime in the spring. The spring ends in June. You know? So there's something strange going on here. Something is... It's just... You know, and the timing as well. Just... It doesn't sound right. You know, it just doesn't... And there's something going on here. Like I said, it's like Project Phoenix, you know. I get the feeling that they offered too much.
Yeah.
And you could tell he learned from his mistake, by the way. In his next Kickstarter, he didn't offer that many Kickstarter rewards. He kept it a little more, I don't know. It's, you know, we're going nowhere with this, so we're going to move on to the next item.
Basically, very poor planning, and Paul would be like, see, I told you. But anyways...
Well, here's the thing that Paul would vehemently deny. Nintendo NX set to be the new face of Nintendo with a busy 2016 planned. And I'll tell you what part that he would deny vociferously, because in the last podcast he even said there's no way. So, Nintendo NX is said to be the new face of Nintendo with a busy 2016 planned. That's according to Nintendo Pleasant Tatsumi Kimishima. See, I know how to say these names. Why don't you?
I did say the name fine. Calm down.
No, you... You stumbled over Keiji Inafune.
Inafune. Yeah.
Tatsumi Kimishima. Anyways, who? Well, it's better than Paul.
I've heard worse. It's not like I went
Kai J Kappa. I can't do this crap. It's like, I, you know, I just, whatever.
We say, you say Key G in a phone.
No, hey, in a phone,
because it sounds funny.
I did not say
funnier.
In a phone.
I didn't say you said. I said, no, if you're going to really deliberately mangle it, cage in a phone. Oh, actually, I feel like I'm in a cage sometimes in a phone.
Right,
oh, well, actually, those, you don't see them anymore, do you? You never saw phone booths to begin with for a long time, you know.
There's some,
No, I mean phone booths. I mean ones that you get to go
phones.
In and close
there
the door.
Pay phones around still.
Yeah, but I'm talking about payphones with an actual booth.
Yeah, I think there's probably not many booths left.
No. I think we're getting way off topic here.
Yeah, let's go back. I'm sorry.
So anyways, Tatsumi Kimishima said that recent reports have suggested the NX could be unveiled as early as March, but would only be fully revealed in June. And this is where Paul was saying, no way, it's going to be in 2017 and 2018. And maybe he would have kept on extending it to the next Nintendo console is going to be in 2030 or something. You know, but I keep on saying it's going to be this year. And, you know, if it's... You know, revealed in March. That would be very interesting. It would then be followed by a release in time for holiday 2016. Quite a turnaround for a device that is yet to be made public. Kimishima spoke recently to Japanese newspaper Mainichi Shinbun, revealing that the Nintendo NX will not build on old ideas, but will be a fresh take on gaming. Oh, God. No. No, 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 no. 100 times no! We saw this before. We saw this with the Wiimote. We saw no more gimmicks. I know I haven't read the entire article.
It's all about the gimmicks.
It's still gonna be all about it because they want a fresh take on gaming. No, a box that you plug in and you attach controllers to and you play games with. You know, that's what people want. They don't want a fresh take on gaming. They want an old take on gaming.
It all ended after the SNES, and they went to N64 doing 3D, and of course it was...
Yeah, but the
really
N64 still
3D.
Used cartridges when everybody else was using discs. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. It took them forever to get to discs. Before, that was ridiculous.
Anyway, however, the Nintendo president failed to mention any plans for a 2016 launch, but did expand on some other ideas that are being worked on. Games industry consultant Dr. Serkan Toto... Oh, boy. Your last name is Toto. Anyways, translated the interview, confirming that Nintendo is set to launch their first smartphone app in March. It is unclear what product it is directly in reference to, although it could be connected to already the Pokemon Go AR game revealed in 2015. No, it's actually a piece of crap, something called Nantuno or something like that. It has nothing to do with Pokemon. And it's the only app they've announced so far, by the way. So much for the Nintendo Blitz on iOS. Kimishima says it's vital for Nintendo to experiment with new business models. He confirms the first smartphone app will be rolled out in March. The plan is to bring profits to 100 billion yen, which is 855 million in U.S. dollars, in several years. 100 billion yen would be four times the amount of last year's profit for Nintendo.
That's quite an ambitious statement there. I don't know if they can do it, but it'd be interesting to see.
Anyways, like I said, stop. We don't need. What's next? What's Nintendo?
No. See, people have been complaining.
Do we want the heart monitored Nintendo controller again?
They didn't do anything new. And now they're going to try something new. We don't know what that new is.
You know what they
yet.
Need to do? They need to make new properties of video games. The software has to be new.
Yeah.
Not the hardware.
Obviously, they're going to do
See, what they're going to do is they're going to plop out yet another Super Mario Bros. Although, I don't know what they're going to do after having Mario Maker. Maybe they'll bundle it with the Mario Maker. And you have to complete levels to earn... whatever. And they'll say they're going to make a Mega Man... I mean, not a Mega Man. I mean a... Oh, damn. What's the one with Pit? Oh, Kid Icarus. They'll say they'll make a new Kid Icarus and they'll botch it. They say they'll make another Donkey Kong and they'll botch it. They say they're going to make another Zelda and they'll make the same Zelda they've been making for the past 20 years.
I still want to play Skyward Sword. I feel like I'm missing out on that one. I have not played it and I want to play it.
Yeah, Paul will tell you it's the same game except they handhold you even more. That's the problem with Nintendo games, have you noticed? They've been getting easier and easier and easier.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't like that.
And they keep on saying, oh, by the way, do you remember you have to press A to swing your sword? Just in case you forgot. Yeah. You have to move the controller to make your character walk in different directions. Up means up, left means left, right means right, and down means down. You got that? We're going to remind you the next level. We'll probably have another... game in which Jigglypuff is again some sort of fabric. Maybe they'll get kinky and make it silk.
You know, oh, they're cloth thing.
Silk Jigglypuff. Wait, is it Jigglypuff? No, it's not Jigglypuff.
I don't remember what the hell it name
he was. Looks like Jigglypuff. That's why I'm getting confused. The Pokemon looks exact. Oh, Kirby.
Kirby
looks like Jigglypuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Except Kirby can eat a Jigglypuff and then poop him out.
Yeah.
That's always bothered me about those games, is Kirby eats people and poops them out.
Stop and poop them out. Poop your enemies out.
You know, not even Alexander the Great did that. Eat his enemies and poop them out. Genghis Khan eats his enemies and poops them out. In front of his enemies, too. Says, you see your general? Well, I'm about to show you what your general looks like now.
Oh, man.
This is what your general looks like now. Yes, I changed his skin color. He's a little more brown now. With flecks of green.
Oh, man. It sounds like something Seth MacFarlane would make a joke about.
No, I think it's more like a Jackasses sort of thing. No, they just drink horse semen. Oh. I wish I never saw that. It haunts my nightmares.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
They did the same thing on that bowling movie with Woody Harrelson and...
Yeah, but that was not so bad. I mean, I liked Kingpin. It wasn't...
Yeah,
it wasn't,
Kingpin, that
it
was
wasn't
funny.
Terrible. You know. I mean, the Farrelly brothers, even though they like to do gross-out stuff, it wasn't that gross-out. It wasn't, you know, and it wasn't real life either.
Yeah, that's true. It was just kind of your imagination. They didn't actually say that that's what he was drinking. But
I love the landlady in Kingpin and how he haunts her dreams, and she haunts his dreams.
But at least it had Bill Murray, and that was good.
Yeah, Bill Murray was the highlight, and I liked the fact that he got what was coming to him at the end.
Yeah,
you know, but just you see the thing about Bill Murray, and we'll get back to video games, is that he's able to. Go overboard on everything, you know, mm-hmm. and still do it with a flourish, you know. Like, if you ever watch Groundhog Day, do you remember when he stuffs an entire pastry in his mouth and just shoves the entire pastry in?
Yeah.
And he's trying to be gluttonous, and it's just that's a perfect way of showing gluttony. Just take a pastry, shove it in your mouth all at once.
That's
you know, and casually do it. Yeah. Which is why I think he, when you're supposed to hit Bill Murray, he wants you to actually hit him.
So he can go flying back.
No, I mean, in Groundhog Day, all those things in which he's slapping him, that's a real slap. When, in Scrooged, when Carol Kane hits him with the toaster, she actually hits him with a toaster.
Wow. He really wants authenticity there.
Yeah, and he always mugs great after it, you know. And there's a reason for that. I just hope he doesn't accidentally bite off his own tongue when you do something like that.
Ooh, that's, Yeah, I'm looking forward to his new movie, but I guess we're back to back to the games.
Didn't that Christmas movie... no, it was a Christmas show that was Bill Murray that already came out.
Yeah.
Jesus. Anyways, speaking of bad planning...
Yeah. Oh, Five Nights at Freddy's World pulled from Steam. This is from Game Watcher. Five Nights at Freddy's World, an RPG spin-off of the popular jump scare game, has been pulled from Steam after a disastrous launch last Thursday. In a Steam community post for Five Nights at Freddy's 4, developer Scott Cawthon, explained why it was pulled.
Come on, you're having worse trouble with the English last names than you are with the Japanese last names.
Because I have trouble, and I don't spend a lot of time reading out stuff, so a lot of times...
That's okay. You're doing better than Paul. I really hope that Paul listens to these podcasts, so we can get him to react.
It'd be nice. Anyway, so he explains why it was pulled. Hi, everyone. I wanted to make a post about the fate of Five Nights at Freddy's World. Even though the game had a very positive rating with 87%, I was not satisfied with the reviews and rating it was getting.
By the way, just so you know, the game was half finished and incomplete. Just it was just he released a incomplete game. Not a buggy game, an incomplete game. So it was not only buggy, it was
a game that didn't need to be made. I mean, an RPG, but, Freddy Fighting, no. That's, no.
But read on.
For that reason, I've decided to remove the game from Steam. I've also asked Valve to make it so the game could be refunded regardless of the amount of time it has been owned, meaning that anyone could get a refund at any time. It may take them a while to get to set that up, but it will be in place soon. Cawthorn, oh, there is an N. Cawthorn.
That's wrong. That's misspelling. It should be Cawthon, not Orr.
Okay, Cawthon. Oh, it's like, anyways, Cawthon then announced that the world would be getting a fully 3D overworld map for when it was eventually re-released. Even more surprising, then, he revealed that from this point forward, the game will always be free, regardless of whether the game, the gamer owned the game or previously or not. This doesn't, no, see, this doesn't fit. Like, this is supposed to be a scary thing, an RPG.
Oh, come on, it's supposed to be whimsical.
Not.
It's whimsical.
Then you're just kind of killing it. You're just like, you're almost retconning.
You already released four of the games in the series. You know, here's the thing, there's something called Villain Decay, and, it goes from being scary, the villain is scary, and then, he becomes a hero, and then the last thing is that they get parodied, and then self-parody. So he's just accelerating. It was gonna be, you know, look at Hannibal Lecter. No one's scared by Hannibal Lecter.
Really?
He's just goofy. He's a parody of himself. Look at Freddy. You know, in the first film, you know, he occasionally cracked a joke, right? By the sixth thing, he was a comedian who happened to kill his audience, literally. You know, they had to go back to New Nightmare to make him scary again.
There are horror RPG games like Parasite Eve, and there's another one.
Yeah, but you see, they don't have. See, those were made in the 90s, okay, when video games were expensive, and you know, and they didn't get released enough so that you'd have people making fun of them. You know, look at Frankenstein's monster. In the 30s, he was really scary, and then eventually he started hanging out with Abbott and Costello.
But I mean, it just I'm glad he's doing refunds though, when it's even seemingly nice that he's going to make the game completely free.
I get the impression that this was just a little pet project. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to release it on Steam. Yeah, charge $5, you know, whatever. I don't really care about the price. And then when he realized, oops, I released a bad build and it's not complete, you know what, screw it, I'll just make it free. Because I don't think he ever intended to really charge for it all that much. I think it was sort of like, yeah, might as well, why not? You know, it's like taking no effort for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the thing about Five Nights and Freddy's is that I was not really impressed by that game anyway.
No,
it's a jump scare
either.
Game. It's a jump scare game. And being startled isn't scary. No matter how, you know.
Yeah, it always felt over the top when I was watching people's reactions. Like, this is not that bad. You might jump a little bit screaming. I mean, calm down, people.
I don't know. I haven't watched reaction videos. I don't watch reaction videos, to tell you the truth.
It wasn't so much a reaction video. They were actually playing.
No, I know. I'm just saying, I don't watch reaction videos in which you see people reacting to, say, two girls, one cup, or reacting to the Star Wars Force Awakens trailer.
You know, frankly, reaction videos seem really over the top. The very few that I've seen,
it's like they're
playing up the reaction.
Well, no, I mean, the ones that get the most reaction, the people who are more over top get more hits. I'm pretty sure there's more subtle ones.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a reaction with Rich Evans watching RoboCop, and his expression at the end was, meh. Meh. The film did turn out to be meh. The RoboCop reboot. Mm-hmm. That's on Netflix. I still haven't watched because I don't want to watch it.
And don't.
Although, from what I hear, it's an interesting inversion in which, in the original RoboCop, he goes from being a machine, after he turns into RoboCop, he goes from being a machine and getting more and more and more and more human, right? The reverse is true in the remake. He's very personable, you know, after being melded in the machine, but he keeps on getting more and more and more and more robotic as he goes along. So he's actually losing his humanity, while in the original, he was gaining his humanity back. So at least that's a nice little twist. They just made it into a PG-13 superhero action. You see, that's a movie in which they should have just called it Robot Cop Man, you know, or something that had nothing to do with RoboCop. Ditch the licensing. Yeah, people have heard of RoboCop, but just call it something else.
I don't know if that's so much a twist as a different perspective, because I remember in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of stories with AI creatures, robots, like Data from Star Trek, wanting to be human. And nowadays, it's more like this fear that the more artificial you become, the more artificial you'll be, and less human, and you're going to lose your humanity.
Because that doesn't explain Chappie, then.
What?
Chappie. The movie by Neil Blomkamp about a robot named Chappie. It's a police robot who's kidnapped by these thugs who teach him how to be a thug. It's sort of like what happened in Short Circuit 2.
Yeah, Short Circuit. Yeah, Johnny, he was another example of a robot wanting to find his humanity.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of the first film. I liked actually the second one a little bit better because it had, oh, geez, what's his name again? One of Spinal Tap was in it. Oh, shoot, I forgot his name.
Yeah, are you talking about the guy who did Blackface?
He's the blonde guy from Spinal Tap. Michael McKean. Okay. Yeah, it's Michael McKean. Okay. You never saw this is Spinal Tap?
Nope.
Really?
Really.
You better buy a DVD right now and watch it. It still holds up. Good. As a matter of fact, I just watched it today, and I watched it with the commentary. But the commentary is interesting in that the cast, the three guys who play Spinal Tap, are commenting on the movie as the characters of Spinal Tap. That's so yeah, just get the DVD. It's like $5 now. You know, the DVD, not the Blu-ray, but the DVD. $5 from the MGM and just play it, and you'll laugh your ass off. Because every you know, here's the thing is that you know you have a great mockumentary when real life rock stars are saying that the things that happened in that movie happened to them. And now I can't discuss this is Spinal Tap because you have to see it. Maybe it's on Netflix. I don't know.
I'll look on Netflix. It might be on there. It's a good chance.
You gotta watch this. There's one scene which will have you rolling in the aisles. Actually, there's several, but this one, even though the setup, you can see what's gonna happen because they tell you what's going to happen. When it actually happens, you're like, you're dying.
Wow.
It was also, by the way, Rob Reiner's first film.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was his first.
Yeah, it was his very first film. In 1984. And he actually plays the interviewer. It's sort of like a also mocking Last Waltz, because Martin Scorsese was a clueless interviewer in that. That Rob Reiner makes fun of that and is a clueless interviewer in this too. Yeah, this is Spinal Tap. You got to see it.
Okay.
And anybody else who hasn't seen it out there, you got to see it. It's one of the you know, it made the mockumentary popular. I mean, Woody Allen was doing it before them, but it's just hilarious. Anyways, the question of the week is: what is your favorite mobile or social game? And you know, we never answered that last week, so we'll answer it now. Or did you answer it?
I thought we did. I was saying, I think I picked Codebreaker.
Oh, right.
Any puzzle game, really, I like to play on mobile. Something that I can just put the phone down at any given point. And
well, maybe you should try Rugo. It's not a mobile game, though. It's a PC game, because it'd be very hard to play on your mobile.
I don't know if you would count games that have been ported to console or were previously on console. My
Actually,
wife
you know
is
what?
Playing the Dragon Quest series
I bet I can tell you a game that you might be interested in. Or at least I know that I know for a fact that our friend, you know, your podcast co-host or actually host Dan Quick. And it's only mobile, which is a lot disappointing to a lot of people, but that's Civilization Revolution 2, which is going to be coming out.
We talked about that, and I think, I can't remember exactly the details, but in general, the consensus was that this was pretty much just a remaking of the previous game, and they didn't seem to, I think they took away features or something. I'd have to go back and look into it, but it was like, they didn't really improve the game, it sounded like. So I don't know, I have to look again at videos or something.
I got the first one for free on iOS. when EA gave it away, you know, they would do these things where they gave it away. I got it for free. I haven't played it in a while. Maybe I should play it soon.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
Yeah. Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, this is at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or our forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum. I have to check the forum, see if anybody actually posted there, aside from spam. Or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us at iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon and Steam. What am I saying at Steam? I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter, and he is at AlphaShard on Twitter as well. Scott, I mean. And Paul is Stager Monkey. I might as well, you know, get some of his fans, see if they want to talk to him. Hey, if you're fans of Paul and you go to Stager Monkey, tell him that Gaming Podcast sent you there.
Tell him that he should listen.
And that he should listen. Because we're saying bad things about him and he'll be upset.
Yeah, he loves hate mail.
Yeah. Well, he loves hate mail. He doesn't like hate from his co-hosts.
Ah, we don't hate him. We love him.
Yeah. Asterisk. Oh, I gotta find some boilerplate for that asterisk. Anyways, this is gonna be a real pain to edit, but, you know, whatever.
It was fun.
Anyways, you can... Oh, I already said that. I already did the show notes thing. Yeah, so we will see you next week.
And happy gaming, everyone.